Welcome back to the Mastering Your Fertility podcast. This show is all about empowering couples with the knowledge they need to get pregnant, stay pregnant, and have the healthiest baby possible. I'm Kristen Cornett, a functional nutritional therapy practitioner and owner of an online fertility practice called Tiny Feet. I work with women and couples all over the world to optimize their health and fertility so they can build the families they've always dreamed of. You can learn more about me on my website at tinyfeet.co. Thanks so much for tuning in with me this week. Before we get started, I want to invite you to check out a couple of free resources that can help you move forward on your fertility journey. First is my free Are You Healthy Enough to Get Pregnant quiz, which will ask you about common symptoms in five areas of health that are foundational to fertility, as well as provide you with some practical tips on how to get started improving your health in each area. Next is the free mini course on how to choose the best prenatal supplements, which walks you through the specific nutrients you need to support your fertility and a healthy pregnancy, and how to find high-quality supplements to meet your needs. And lastly, if you're interested in working with me one-on-one to get to the root cause of your fertility struggles and heal your body through functional medicine, you can schedule a 20-minute phone consult with me. You can find links to each of these free resources through the link in this week's episode description. You're listening to episode 88, and today I'm interviewing chiropractic physician Dr. Anne Marie Barter about mold exposure and its potential impact on health and fertility. Although many people have heard that encountering certain types of mold can be harmful, few people seem to realize just how common mold exposure really is and all the ways it can disrupt health. So many of us have been unknowingly exposed to mold in water-damaged buildings, in our homes, and even in our food supply. Unfortunately, mold exposure isn't always obvious, and the health symptoms it can cause are wide-ranging and frequently confused with other conditions. Many people with mold illness have seen dozens of practitioners and been through countless healing protocols without getting well. But the reason we're talking about mold on a fertility podcast is that it can be a hidden source of inflammation and stress on the body, leading to immune system dysfunction and hormone imbalances that can make it very difficult to conceive. Thankfully, it is absolutely possible to test for and remediate mold issues in your environment, as well as heal from mold illness if you've been exposed and experienced negative health effects. So in this episode, you'll learn about how mold exposure can impact health and fertility, some of the most common symptoms that might point toward mold exposure and illness, the primary routes of exposure to mold in our environment, why some people react very strongly to mold while others seem to experience no or very few effects, some of the options for testing for mold in our external environments as well as in our bodies, and the basic elements of an effective healing protocol for mold illness. If you've been experiencing any chronic unexplained health issues, or you have a known or suspected exposure to mold, past or present, then you won't want to miss this episode. So I'll go ahead and introduce you to Dr. Barter and we'll get started. Dr. Anne Marie Barter graduated from the University of Western States in Portland, Oregon, and is a chiropractic physician at Alternative Family Medicine and Chiropractic Clinic in Denver, Colorado. Dr. Barter has advanced training in applied kinesiology, completing over 400 extra classroom hours, and is certified to practice applied kinesiology. She also has studied functional blood chemistry under Dr. Datis Karazian. Dr. Barter helps her patients optimize health by incorporating diet counseling, whole food supplementation, herbal therapy, wellness and lifestyle coaching, scar tissue work, deep tissue massage, and exercise programs into her practice. She also hosts the Fearless Health podcast. She is passionate about chiropractic and helping people get out of pain and reach their maximum potential. You can learn more about Dr. Barter on her website at altfammed.com, and you can find links to her practice, podcast, and social media through the link in this week's episode description. Enjoy the interview. All right. Welcome, Dr. Anne Barter. Thank you so much for joining me today on Mastering Your Fertility.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Me too. This is an interesting topic, one that has not been covered yet on the podcast, and something that I think there are probably some people out there that might be wondering about. This is kind of coming to light more and more as a potential issue, and functional doctors are getting really up on how to address this for their clients and patients. So we're definitely going to be talking about mold today.
Yes, I like it.
Yeah. So why don't we start off by having you share a little bit more about your background and kind of what led you to chiropractic and functional medicine?
Sure. It's a long road, and I think we all end up on this long road when we really want to work in this space to help people or have the passion for it. So my long road started actually when I was about 14 or 15. I remember going into my primary care because I was having such bad period cramps and I was having acne, and I just felt like how much I was exercising, I wasn't really losing weight. And I went in there and she ran lab work and she said the dreaded, well, everything is normal. You're just fine. And, you know, here's some different gel cream for your acne. My neighbor sells it, so it should work fine from this, you know, she's a pharmaceutical rep. And if that doesn't work, we can do birth control. And if that doesn't work, we can do Accutane. Have a nice day, on your way. So fast forward about 2 years, and I remember waking up one day and my period cramps were so severe, I couldn't stand up straight. And I remember asking my mother to stay home, which was really atypical for me. I really liked to go to school. And she said, absolutely not. We're going to go get a second opinion. She actually, I went to another doc. That doc sent me to the emergency room. Apparently I had confused period cramps with my appendix exploding. And the doctor was super horrified that my period cramps were that bad, that would be, you know, confusing. So anyway, the whole time I'm getting an organ removed. Oh, you're perfectly healthy. You're in such great shape, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, I remember at 17 or 18 being like, wow, that's so weird. You know, I'm getting body parts removed, but I'm perfectly healthy. Okay. Fast forward one more year, and I started breaking out during finals time with severe hives. They were sending me to the emergency room, and the hives were so severe, they were swelling up in my throat. And when I was breathing at night, my breathing would get shallower and shallower. So each night, every night, I was at the emergency room. It was just like constant. And it was just so frustrating. And again, nothing's wrong with you. Here's, you know, IV Benadryl. Nothing's wrong with you. Here's more. Anyway, got so bad one night that I went to the emergency room and they sent me home, and my breathing got so shallow. My roommate in college picked me up and ran me back to the hospital because the hives were swelling up in my throat. And at that point I was done. I was over it. And I started seeking health other places. And I looked at alternative health, and they started telling me why. And that was the main thing that I couldn't get to, was why. And so this has been a journey to change my life and to change my health. And when I finally, you know, got into the career world, I hated it. And all I wanted to do was help people, not negotiate major systems for an equipment for Lockheed Martin or whatnot. I really wanted to help people. So I just went back to school, and, you know, chiropractic really changed my life, like my structure. And so that was very powerful, but along with the functional medicine and nutrition. And so I just love doing this. And I feel like I have walked through so much personally. And so I can help patients with the same thing. And now we have lab work, and we can just really drill down and make it so much easier than it was, you know, when I was going through this, because I was like paleo 20 or so years ago when it was not cool to be paleo, right? Not at all. So anyway, that's how I got here. So I just really have the passion and really want to help people.
I can tell, I can hear that in your voice and just watching you here on Zoom, that you're very passionate about this. And a lot of us in the functional health space are very passionate, and we come to that passion by having experienced something pretty significant ourselves on our health journey.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Absolutely.
So talk about how you first started on this mold journey with your patients. Like, what brought you to being interested in this, to addressing it? Because a lot of practitioners kind of aren't addressing this in their practice, or they don't know they should be. It seems like kind of this like big beast of a thing that is, you know, difficult to really look into. It has some symptoms that can be associated with other things and can be hard to identify. So how did you get involved with helping patients heal from mold illness?
Yeah, that's a good question. It took me a little bit of time to get involved with mold. Mold also came from my own struggles. You know, I would hear people talk about mold and I was like, oh yeah, whatever, you know, that's not me. I didn't see it. How do you know about mold? How are you even testing for mold? It seemed like some convoluted topic that you couldn't really, you know, pin down, right? And so I remember for myself, I remember talking to patients, and I will generally give patients a 30-day elimination diet. And they really, really, some patients would really struggle with that. And they would say, you know, doc, I really want to do it, but I can't. I really want to do this, but I just can't. I have to have X, Y, and Z. And I started realizing that their dopamine was low. And dopamine is such a feel-good neurotransmitter. It makes us feel motivated. It makes us feel focused. You don't need caffeine in the morning to do things. You feel worthwhile. It's just so important for overall health. It's a different type of depression that you see. And I started realizing that these people had really low dopamine and then serotonin, like our happy hormone. It makes us feel just happy, like, oh, yay, let's go play putt-putt golf. You know those people, like they're so excited. And, you know, I start to realize that these people were really low in these neurotransmitters, and a lot can affect neurotransmitters. But I just start to see a pattern. And so I started digging into those. And one of the major things that depletes those is mold. And it wasn't a willpower issue. And these folks kept on saying, oh, it's got to be a willpower issue. So, and at the time, I had just moved personally. And I moved into this house, and it was a really good deal. And it was exactly where I wanted to be. And I'm like, all right. And I started getting fatigued. And I started saying when I would get home, I would use this comment like I was blasted, and I would rather sit on the couch than do anything else. And I started feeling like kind of itchy in my skin, or like a skin crawling symptom. And that was it. I was like, I bet my skin's just dry. I'm getting older. I just can't work the same number of hours. But I ran a half Ironman, you know, while living in that house. So like there was nothing that appeared to be wrong. And I started craving sugar, just like my patients were telling me that they did. And one way to really boost neurotransmitters is with processed carbohydrates or with sugar. And I was like, wow, that's super interesting. And I remember going away for a weekend, and I slept really well. My sleep felt like I wasn't resting as well as I once had. And I came back, and I had the best night's sleep that I could remember when I went away. And I came back, and I'm like, and I smelled it. And I'm like, I live in mold. I totally live in mold. And I had gained 10 pounds and my clothes still fit. So it was 10 pounds of inflammation, which is super disgusting. I don't even want to know what that did to my body. And yeah, so I moved out of the house, dropped 10 pounds immediately from inflammation. And suddenly like these symptoms started getting better. But I personally had mold exposure, and I'd walk through it and knew what the symptoms were. And I found everything that I could on mold. And I thought, well, I live in Colorado. There must not be a problem here. And this must not be something that my patients are really experiencing. And boy, I couldn't be more wrong. And I've heard great, very well decorated docs that are very influential say mold is not in Colorado. And I will 100% like respectfully disagree, because I run tests. We run, you know, we'll get, you know, homes checked, et cetera. And black mold, the mold that survives here is incredibly, incredibly toxic. So that's how I got into it. It was, you know, primarily from my own experience. And I interviewed, on my podcast, I interviewed a fella named Neil Nathan, eventually, that wrote a book called Toxic. And he is just kind of like one of the experts in mold. He's incredible. And reading his book was just so incredibly eye-opening. So, I mean, it's definitely a jumping point. If what I'm saying resonates, his book is incredible. It has mold and Lyme, but, you know, he hits on the mold pieces really great. So it's a good reference.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a story for you. And yeah, I definitely have seen that shared in the health community. Like there are certain areas of the country where it's unlikely that mold exposure would be a problem. But it's interesting what you're saying about Colorado, like the type of mold that survives there probably is hardier and more toxic than what survives in other places that are probably more prone to mold. Like I live in the Pacific Northwest in Portland, Oregon. Everything is damp here, like 9 to 10 months out of the year. So it makes a lot of sense that there would be mold here, but I could see it might be difficult for some people to think like, oh, a drier place like Colorado could still have mold issues.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just in my basement when I lived there, there was just black mold all over it, but you don't necessarily have to see it. You know, once you were able to to get there. And, you know, I lived in Portland too. And I would say that it was not as bad there. You know, it just wasn't, the mold wasn't as hardy. You know, it's everywhere. It's moisturizing and your skin is beautiful because you live in Portland, Oregon. But, you know, it's just, you know, here, you know, certain places, if the mold can grow and it's black mold, it is very, very serious. So.
Well, I think you mentioned something that's really interesting. And one of the things like that's a red flag for me with clients is that they tell me they feel better when they're not at home.
Right. Perfect.
Yeah. Yep. Not just from like lower stress levels because they went on vacation, but like, oh, I have asthma and wheezing and it gets better when I'm not at home. I'm like, yep, we're testing for mold.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's a perfect thing. So, I mean, I think for anybody out there that feels better when they leave their house, that's a big red flag and a big keynote, because most of mold comes from history to know, because a lot of times I think a common misconception is I don't have mold in my house. Well, how do you know that? Well, I haven't seen it. Okay. That doesn't mean it's growing in your drywall. Drywall is trees. So it's growing up a tree that maybe you can or can't see in your house because of water damage. And depending on what part of the country you're in, if you've had a leak or something that has gone on for, you know, 24 to 48 hours, it's debated. Ultimately that can light up into full blown mold.
For sure. And then there's workplaces too. I mean, a lot of people work in older buildings and you think like, oh yeah, I don't really feel very good when I'm at work, but maybe I feel better when I'm at home and I'm not working, or they feel better when they go on vacation. And, you know, especially I get here in the downtown area, like there's older buildings, there's lots of water damaged buildings just because of how wet it is here. And so workplace could be a major exposure for people too that they're not considering.
You know what else was interesting? Another place we found that does have mold exposure are hot yoga studios.
Oh, yeah.
And if you think about that and you have a leak and then it's like, you know, a perfect breeding ground with that heat that's on and then off and then on and then off. It's a really good breeding ground. So there were some situations where there were a couple yoga studios here that were found to have like black mold infestation, you know, just because of, you know, the mix of things, and then a long-term leak or a roof leak or whatever has created that. I've heard in other parts of the country, if you go away on vacation, it's so humid. If, you know, you turn off your AC or whatnot in a hot time, that can grow, you know, mold or, you know, a leak or whatnot. Or if a shower isn't sealed off well, and even new construction, a lot of times the water can pool in the back and you're going to be none the wiser. Mm-hmm. But something that I didn't know that was surprising to me was I was talking to a fella in construction. And I think generally the common thought is that mold grows in an old house, and it certainly does. But I was talking to somebody about new construction, because I had a patient that moved into a home, and she basically, I guess there was a leak during the building process, and I guess there was a wall that was full of mold. And so she's currently litigating with the contractors and, you know, doing the mold protocol, but basically brand new construction, it lit up. And I was talking to somebody in construction, and he said, you know, it can definitely grow in new construction because new construction is much tighter. So if there's ever a leak, you can have a lot of problems.
Yeah, because there's nowhere for it to go, and there's not exactly like super energy efficient homes that don't really allow much like cross breeze or any drafting. It's like you don't really get the airflow that you need. And I read some scary statistic. Now, I have not validated this, but it was like up to 20% of new construction homes could be affected by mold, especially because a lot of times they're building in wet seasons. Like there's not really a great construction season here in the Pacific Northwest because it takes longer typically to build a home or like a set of apartment buildings or something. It takes longer to do that then we have months of dry weather.
Well said. Exactly. Well said. And you think about old construction, it's much more breathable.
Yeah, for sure. It is. And then I think one other thing I want to mention is that, like, it's not just the mold itself. It's not like you have to touch mold to get sick from mold. Like, mold produces toxins called mycotoxins that can actually end up, like, airborne in your home, can end up in your air ducts. So, like, just because you see a small patch of mold doesn't mean, like, you're only affected if you're right there sniffing it. Like, that's part of why mold can be so insidious and so problematic for people, is that we end up actually absorbing these mycotoxins that make
us absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's an awesome point to drive home. And I think to even drive that home further, it's a biotoxin too, which means it can be used in warfare, and it has been used in warfare, and it's that toxic. Like, I think it's at the top of the hierarchy when you're dealing with a case. If there's mold exposure, I believe that that needs to be addressed at the top of the case, you know, depending on what is going on with the case, certainly, because it's a living tissue. And like you said, it's producing toxic byproducts all the time. And so that's living in your body, and that's, it's just critical to get all of that out.
Yes, it definitely is critical. So we talked a little bit about some of the symptoms that you mentioned in your patients and some of the things that you experience personally, but there are a number of ways that mold can negatively affect health and also hormone balance, which makes it a relevant discussion for fertility. So talk about some of the things that mold can disrupt in the body and how that can ultimately affect fertility. And we were talking before we started recording about pregnancy outcomes as well with some new research.
Sure. So mold is a great mimicker. And that means that it looks like every other complaint. So you will have a mold complaint that potentially looks like IBS. For example, irritable bowel. You will have a mold. So traditionally, we think of mold symptoms as like, oh, I have red eyes, or I have respiratory symptoms. But you can see rashes, you can see eczema, you can see atopic, aka atopic dermatitis, which we're going to get into with the studies. You can see like jabbing, pick, like stabbing pain, or pain that won't get come out of your body, extreme fatigue. Fibromyalgia in a lot of cases can be linked back to mold. It can certainly be linked to other things, but certainly fibromyalgia, a lot of times opportunistic infections that you'll see, you know, that other folks are talking about, like Epstein-Barr in a lot of places, that's an opportunistic infection. And generally something is giving it an environment for that, right? So that could be mold. A chronic candida infection that you've been dealing with forever. Remember, mold is in the yeast fungi family, and so is candida. And so candida tends to be much more opportunistic in your gut, and so that can create problems. It absolutely disrupts hormones, hook, line, and sinker. I have seen cysts resolve with treating mold. I have seen heavy-duty bleeding problems, fibroids. In my personal experience, I have seen that can be associated with mold. I have seen Hashimoto's or autoimmune thyroid associated with mold, hair loss, itchy, dry skin. You know, I'm trying to think. It's just like the list goes on and on and on. It's just every single tissue in your body can be affected. One thing that's interesting when we detox out mold, kidney pain, chronic kidney stones, chronic UTIs, they can all be associated.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I've noticed with some people, because I have people in my practice that have addressed mold issues prior to working with me, and I noticed that it kind of creates like a health trauma that can kind of long-term throw off their pituitary and mess up their hormones even after they've removed themselves from the exposure and done a mold detoxification program. And so it's important to like recognize how it can affect the brain and how it can kind of create this sort of trauma response, especially for people that end up in that like chronic inflammatory response syndrome, like the SIRS category of people who kind of have genetic predispositions to responding really strongly and in a very inflammatory manner to mold that don't necessarily always get better just from being removed from the exposure.
Right. I mean, you know, hormones are completely affected by inflammation. What's mold? I mean, mold is complete inflammation. So, I mean, and I always say, you know, you don't need your hormones to ultimately like sustain life. So it's the first system that always goes when there's something dysregulated in your body. Your body's trying to tell you, hey, like, I am not ready to have a child right now. I'm not ready to have a baby. We are not in the proper health place to do that. And so I think that that's a really important point for people to see. It's like something needs to be addressed for this to fully function, right? You're not birth control deficient.
Yeah, definitely true. We are not birth control deficient. But I think, you know, one of the things that's common with mold exposure and some of the things that you were saying you've seen resolve, like super heavy bleeding, fibroids, like really painful periods, some of these things that we associate with estrogen dominance, because mold can have kind of an estrogenic effect on people, which is really important to note, because excess estrogen is one of the primary hormone imbalances that we see in women that are struggling either with their fertility or just with their cycle and menstrual cycle health in general.
Mm-hmm. And the one I didn't put, dizziness and ringing in the ears. I actually had a crazy, crazy case. Like, I think this is important, but I have a patient actually that had to get hearing aids, and she actually had severe hearing loss. Once we started the mold detox and she cleaned the mold out of her house, within 2 weeks, she was able to pull her hearing aids out and she was able to hear. So was it a hearing loss issue or was it inflammation? I mean, inflammation can affect every single part of the body. And I think that, you know, as we're looking at this, it's just crazy to see, you know, what we can change. If we can get rid of that inflammatory component, fix that, everything downstream will fix. And you know, you want to start in a hierarchy. And so mold is certainly at the top of that hierarchy for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. It is. And it can affect so many different body systems. So like, just to kind of recap, some of the symptoms that we've talked about are obviously respiratory issues, skin issues, neurological issues, hormone imbalances, gut problems, IBS type symptoms, hives. Oh man, what did I miss?
Oh yeah. All of it. I mean, hormones, right? Neurotransmitter imbalances. I mean, it can affect every single organ system. Bowel issues. I mean, I think that that's the problem. It affects everything.
Right. And because you said it's the great mimicker, it can be difficult for practitioners to figure out like, okay, well, if this is the primary symptom category, but we also have these five other things going on, like what is the right thing to test for first? Because, you know, functional testing is amazing, but it's expensive. And you know, when patients want to prioritize a little bit, it's like, what do you prioritize? You know, you do this test and you don't get the results you're looking for, so you do another one. And it's like, I kind of think that in a lot of cases, when there are different body systems that are being affected and kind of some symptoms that look like they could be related, but maybe not, like it's a good idea to just like at least try to rule that out up front, so we don't like go way down the line and someone stays sick for a long period of time, spends a lot of money on testing when you're right, mold is going to be a priority for those people.
Mm-hmm. And poor people, like there's a lot of folks that are bedridden, like the fatigue can be that chronic, but it can also be in a situation like, you know, you may be listening to this and say, well, you know, I'm not that bad, or I ran a half Ironman while being in an incredibly toxic house. Like, you know, so everybody's going to be different to the level of symptoms and, you know, how their body is responding to that exposure. And what happens, you know, I'll have 30 different mold cases that present 30 different ways. It's just not predictable.
Well, definitely. And that kind of brings up another question. And I touched on this a little bit earlier with some people that are kind of genetically predisposed to like severe inflammatory responses. But, you know, there are people that have lived in a moldy building and they're experiencing mild symptoms, maybe no symptoms, and other people, you know, with the same exposure are just completely debilitated. So, you know, why do some people have such a severe response and others seem to mostly do okay, at least for a while?
Well, it's genetics, right? So some people have the genetic predisposition to not be able to filter out mold as well, which is the HLA-DR gene. And I think that really, you know, the literature has said that it is not the amount of exposure. And I think that that is true in some situations, which means that, okay, somebody is very sensitive to mold exposure. They walk into a grocery store and there is mold somewhere in the grocery store and they're like, oh my goodness, I have such a headache. I'm so dizzy. Like, I don't know what's going on today. It might be my blood sugar, whatever. They walk out and they're better, or they can be debilitated, right? It can just be a little bit of exposure that these folks are exposed to and spun up, right? And then I generally see in practice, even though the literature does not support this, is that it tends to be cumulative. The longer the patient is in that place and the longer the patient is exposed, they tend to increase their symptoms. The shorter amount of time, they're not, you know, and it depends. And then some people genetically are not predisposed at all. Like they could be down there petting the moldy black wall. It's no big deal. They have no issues, no side effects. You know, I personally don't see those people, but I feel like it's a spectrum. Most people aren't so crazy and incredibly sensitive, and most people aren't able to pet the black mold. I think most of us are in the middle category from what I have seen, and we write off our symptoms to being something else. Oh, I'm getting older. Oh, this, that, my mitochondrial, it's my blood sugar, whatever it is. And it certainly could be, and it certainly will affect all those things. But certain people, I do believe it does tend to be at the end, the amount of exposure, but certain people are genetically more sensitive, but the literature says it is not based on the amount of exposure. So it could just be a little exposure and it can trigger you in a bad way. But most of the time, the people that we see debilitated are living in a moldy house and have been there for a while, and they tend to get debilitated from that.
Yeah, I mean, it does make sense the longer that you live in an exposure, particularly if you happen to be a person who struggles a little bit with mycotoxin detox, like you're having trouble getting rid of that biotoxin from your body, that it would have a cumulative effect. You know, more is coming in and you're kind of bottlenecked with eliminating it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, clinically, I can see how that would make sense for you to see people more debilitated the longer that they live in an exposure. But also, I mean, there's so many bio-individual health factors, right? Like how is someone's gut health? How is their liver functioning? What is their diet like? Are they adding dietary mold exposure on top of, you know, what
100%.
We didn't even talk about diet. So talk Ooh. About mold and food, because that's
Oh, I will. So our food supply is 25% contaminated with mold. So this is crazy. The World Health Organization did a study, and there was they couldn't figure out what was going on with this. And so anyway, they shipped out to multiple different schools in multiple different states some like breakfast foods, okay? And so anyway, all these kids from all these different states got sick. Nausea, vomiting, stomach pain, etc. And what does that sound like to you? Because it sounds like food poisoning to me.
Yeah.
And I think, okay, bacteria. Like the food was contaminated, it has something in it, okay? So they pieced this apart and they said, all right, well, these different schools, because there were, I think, 12 different schools affected in 12 different states or something like that. Anyway, the schools themselves, nothing, the only thing that was similar between all the schools was the tortilla. So it was a breakfast burrito. So they got the fillers from other places, you know, so that wasn't consistent, but the tortilla was consistent across the board. The long and short of it was that it was contaminated with mold. It was contaminated with a mycotoxin. And ultimately, the tortilla was, because a lot of times mold can be found in grains, right? So that's where these kids got sick from. So 25% of our food supply is contaminated. So a big source of that can be in grains, but you can also see this in wine, in coffee, in cheeses. I can't even look at blue cheese. I just can't. Gorgonzola, blue cheese, I'm out. But, and I think something else important to think about that we've been taught something different. And I was actually playing a game with friends one night, and there was a question like how to survive. And it says, oh, if you find a moldy piece of bread and you should just, what should you do? You should just, and the answer was just take out that moldy piece of bread and eat the rest of the loaf. The bottom line is if that piece of bread is contaminated, the whole loaf is contaminated. You have to get rid of the whole thing. Sorry. Like it's bad because that, you know, that's definitely contaminated. So it's a huge portion of our food supply. So you have to look at all these things. A lot of times processed dried fruit can have it, but I want to take this back to pregnancy because I think that that's an important part of the podcast.
Yeah.
So in the food that, you know, mycotoxins can contaminate 25% of the world food supply. Exposure during pregnancy looked at the relationship between these toxins and adverse birth outcomes and anemia. Findings suggest that during pregnancy, it may impair fetal growth. There was only one human study that investigated the exposure and prematurity, and no studies investigated pregnancy loss, but animal studies did. And they said that it does actually increase the risk of having a premature baby and also having pregnancy loss. They also find out that it can be, you can have systemic inflammation, impaired placental growth, or elevation in cytokines, or severe inflammation can result in maternal anemia, much smaller baby size, so a smaller child when it comes out, fetal loss, and premature birth, also stillbirth, and low birth rate. So that's from food supply. That's not from living in a moldy house. I also have the moldy house studies as well, if you'd like to hear those. But if you are exposed when the mother is pregnant, if the baby is exposed, it is associated with a lower IQ rate. And it's also associated with atopic dermatitis, also known as eczema is the common term. That is terrifying. And increased allergies in the baby. Like if it does that, and obviously this is, you know, past the baby because of, you know, we know that that happens, but that just is making the child so incredibly sick from the get-go. So they are saying women who reported serious problems with mold are likely to give birth to lower birth rates. They also, let me see, there was one more study that I wanted, that I thought was really important. There was a study out of Poland that talked about kids that, you know, they were not, obviously they had been born, but kids that were exposed to mold, I think around 6 years old in Poland, and you could see the black mold growing on the walls. There were no other effects of in this study. Like there were no smokers in the house. The mother was healthy. These kids had much lower IQ rates from being exposed to mold.
Wow. Yeah, major neurological effects. And it kind of speaks to the ability of mold to affect every body system and result in, you know, a tiny human that is much more susceptible to some of these environmental exposures. You know, we know that that like first 1,000 days from conception to like 2 years old is such an important developmental period. And to have an environmental exposure like this that's extremely toxic and can affect so many body systems is significant. And we're seeing that now. And that's, it's interesting that we have so much research on that. And this was all just from food exposure, right?
No. The first one was from food exposure that I talked about, but then the other ones were actually from living in a black mold. So like the atopic dermatitis was a mother that was actually exposed to black mold from water damage per mm-hmm. se. The Poland study of the lower IQ was also water damaged household. But the first study with basically stillbirth, premature birth, low birth rate, anemia, cytokines, and systemic inflammation was food.
Wow. So pretty significant. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people going, oh my God, this is scary.
Like, I'll never eat again. I'm going to sleep outside.
What am I gonna do about this? And, you know, we know that this is common in a lot of different areas in the US, and particularly, you know, the Pacific Northwest and all along the South where things are, you know, more wet and humid. So I'm sure there are a lot of people who are freaked out now. So let's talk about what we can do to kind of investigate the possibility of mold exposure and kind of what is available in terms of treatment.
Yeah. So what I recommend is I recommend one of two things. You can get a mold testing company out to your house. There is one strain of the black mold that a lot of the testing companies don't test for, which does cause pretty severe neurological damage, pretty severe inflammation in the overall system. But for the most part, they're going to pick up a large portion if you have water damage, and they're also going to tell you where that happens. The second thing that you can do is what I recommend to my patients is there is a place called realtimelabs.com. And there is a test on there called the EMMA test. And you can order that yourself. You can go and you can test, you know, the dust samples in your house. And it will tell you if you have mold or not. And so I think that that's also potentially a good idea if you're unsure what to do or how to move forward. And, you know, that can work. I don't generally recommend, I get asked a lot about the mold testing from Home Depot. I have personally never seen that really work in my area, even when there's huge mold. Most of the mold that I see or that I'm treating in my practice, you know, patients haven't been able to figure it out. So I'm doing a lot more investigative work. And so they have never come up positive where other testing sources have come up positive. But I did talk to a gal one time on a podcast, and she was like, yeah, I totally had mold on my floor. I thought it was there. I did the testing and it came up positive, but I had it all over my kitchen. So for whatever reason, I guess sometimes that does work. That is not the gold standard, but I would really recommend, you know, getting in with a reputable company in your area, find it with recommendations and or because they're going to tell you where it is and or using the real-time lab EMMA test.
Okay.
I think there's a black mold scans test as well. I personally haven't used them. I almost exclusively use real time labs.
Yeah. There's a surprising amount of mold testing companies coming out these days because I think more people are discovering that this is potentially problematic. And so, you know, when clients bring different options to me, I'll kind of research them on an individualized basis to see like, okay, you know, what may be effective, but I agree that having it investigated with a reputable local company that can come out, investigate, tell you where it is, and what it's most likely to be is definitely helpful. What about testing the person for mold exposure.
So I definitely do that, you know, and this cuts both ways. You'll hear docs say, well, it doesn't matter. You know, you could have gotten mold anywhere. So you have to test your house. I mean, I definitely agree with that. You want to make sure that you've eliminated the source. What I use for testing the person is I use Great Plains Labs, Great Plains Lab. And they have a mycotox test. It's a urine test. And so it's basically what you're peeing out and what you're excreting. I definitely challenge this test, right? Because a lot of this is in our fat. And so I will challenge this. I will have people sweat before they run the test. And I will challenge with glutathione to make sure that they're getting this out of their system. I personally use a liposomal glutathione, which is absorbed into, you know, into the systemic circulation. I don't give a pill, just to actually see what's coming out of their system. I will sometimes even do a full-blown like mold protocol with them, but most of the cases I get it with recommending they work out and all work out and or sauna, and then also do the glutathione, you know, challenge to see if we can get some stuff out. And I have them do that about 5 days before they run the test to see what's coming out of their system.
Yeah, that's an awesome way to do it because glutathione is so great at getting into the cell and helping move toxins out of the cell. That's why it's so frequently used in detoxification protocols. But you know, mycotox testing from Great Plains is awesome. I've used that with my clients and it is pretty effective at identifying some potential exposures. And what's nice about that test too is that it will tell you like what specific mycotoxins are elevated and give you some idea of where that may have come from. So if you test the person and they show up positive for one or more of these, then they can kind of backtrack and see, okay, is this most likely coming from food? Is this most likely coming from my home if they haven't done that environmental investigation in their space yet?
You know, what's interesting is I think this is really important to bring up, and I don't know why this came to me now, but I speak a lot on neurotransmitters and neurotransmitter health and like making you feel happy and motivated. And a lot of times people will come to me and say, oh, I need help with my neurotransmitters. Another test I run from Great Plains Labs is called an organic acids test or an oats test. Like it's not checking to see if you have oats, but anyway, it I get that question a lot. But what it's checking for is, you know, it checks for mitochondrial pathways, it checks for neurotransmitter pathways, it has a light mold test on it. It doesn't check for all the species of mold. And it checks for, you know, blood sugar stabilization, you know, fatty acid oxidation, and a few other things like nutrition status. But on this test, it also checks for something called quinolinic acid. And on that, the quinolinic acid piece, I find that people that have had mold in their house will have high levels, or are living in mold, will have high levels of quinolinic acid, and they will feel like they have neurotransmitter imbalances. Like nothing will make them happy. Nothing will make them motivated. And they'll say, hey, like I need you. I need those neurotransmitters. And when we check this, their neurotransmitters are fine. They have high levels of brain inflammation. So I guess it's just another way that I'm able to tell, hey, like it could be some sort of environmental exposure. It may not necessarily be mold, but in a lot of the cases, there has been a commonality to mold.
Yeah. And oat's great. And what there's some really cool education from Great Plains that talks about like certain markers on the fungal markers on organic acids that can help you determine whether or not that mold is colonizing the GI tract or not.
Totally.
Because you could have somebody that has those markers on organic acids, but doesn't have things flag on mm-hmm. the mycotox test, or you could have it be the opposite way. They don't have anything that flags on oat, but they do flag for like environmental type exposure on the mycotox test. Mm-hmm. So it is cool to use those in conjunction. And what I love about organic acids too, is that you can see some of those areas where mold might be affecting their metabolism, their neurotransmitters. So you can kind of see the impact in addition to just identifying the problem.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because oxalates could be off the charts and you can tell that it's exogenous, mm-hmm. you know, and so you'll see that with mold. And then you'll also notice like exactly what you're saying, like everybody is like repping mitochondria these days and everybody is excited about that. But mold and toxins can certainly disrupt those pathways. So if you have mitochondrial dysfunction, you really want to make sure it's not toxic related, you know, and it certainly just could be nutritional. Like, hey, you don't have enough of X or Y or Z or whatever it is, you know, that is affecting that. So yeah, I think that those are the tricky ways that I see it. But, you know, for straight like ease, without getting into all like, you know, the rabbit holes that we look at on tests. But I mean, I run the mycotox test.
That's a good way to just kind of assess. For sure.
Ooh, left field.
Hey, I think people on this podcast generally appreciate that. Getting some of the information about how they can talk to their practitioners about some of the options, for sure.
Totally.
So let's talk about remediation options, because I think a lot of people think that they can just like go at a mold stain in their bathroom with bleach and they're good. Not as simple as that. So, I mean, obviously neither one of us are mold remediation specialists. What do we need to be considering when we're talking about eliminating this from our environment? Probably not cleaning it ourselves would be the first recommendation.
Yeah, it shouldn't be, you shouldn't do, unless you know what you're doing with mold, like you should not do it. Like you don't know how far it's reaching. You need to figure out like what the extent of the damage is. You know, somebody asked me the other day, they're like, well, I found mold and I found all this mold in like under my kitchen sink and this and that, can I just pour bleach on it? And I'm like, no, it's not going to get it all. I think that that's a pretty common misconception on the interwebs. I actually do not know what type of caustic chemical agent you can use to actually completely get rid of mold. I am of a mind, you remove whatever the mold is on. Like if it's on drywall, you remove that entire piece of, you get it out. Like you do not want that in your house. And then you can spray with other caustic agents, but you have to remove the source. So if you're really handy and you feel like you can get in there and completely remove the source and redo it and all of that, great. I have patients that are that handy and can do it. And they come in and they get an expert mold company to come in and retest to make sure that all their numbers are completely normal and their mold levels inside the house are lower than outside the house. But you have to remove the source. Like it is, I mean, it is not something to fool around with.
Absolutely not, for sure. And you can disrupt a mold colony and cause a lot more release of mycotoxin if you're in there like trying to scrub it yourself in your bathroom or on a floor or on drywall or something like that. So gross. Highly recommended addressing it in your house to have that done professionally. I think even if you are handy enough to like do that yourself, you need to make sure that you're wearing proper safety equipment. Like mold is not something to mess around with, in other words. So it's best to hire someone that does it for a living.
I mean, and they, you need to wall it off. Like you need to make sure that, you know, you're, it's basically a complete hazard zone and you need to make sure you're treating it accordingly like that. It's super dangerous stuff. It's super dangerous. Again, it's used in warfare.
Yeah, definitely. So we're not going to get into super specifics about addressing mold illness from the, you know, the health perspective, but just talking about like some of the elements of an effective detoxification protocol for mold. Like, you know, what are some of the nutrients that our bodies tend to need more of when we're detoxifying from mold? This is obviously something that individual listeners will need to speak to their practitioners about, you know, find somebody that's familiar with mold and knows how to like build an effective protocol. But there are some things that can support our bodies during that time. So if you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. You know, I will run a lot of testing on people. I want to know, number one, where they're deficient, where their pathways are backed up. You know, we talk about methylation pathways. I want to make sure that they can detoxify as easy as possible. So I, number one, make sure that first thing I check before I do a mold detox is they have to be pooping. You have to be able to poop. Because if I start addressing a mold issue and you're incredibly constipated, where does that go? Like, where does it go? It comes out through your skin. You feel worse. You're super sick. So number one, I will address the gut to a point where that person can eliminate. You know, I know that I'm not going to get rid of candida or SIBO with a chronic mold problem or when someone's living in a chronic mold environment. That's another FYI. If you've had chronic candida or chronic SIBO that is not going away, you need to check mold because SIBO should technically be gone in a pretty short amount of time in most cases. You should not be addressing SIBO for, have people come in, they've been addressing SIBO for like 2 years. No, there's something else like that's contributing to that to potentially make that an issue. Same thing with candida. Candida is opportunistic. So, you know, I will address the gut to the point where I can make sure that they're eliminating and I'll, you know, I'll pare down that hierarchy. I want to make sure that their liver and gallbladder are functioning really well so that they can detoxify because a lot of times when we're mobilizing some of that, that's, you know, coming through there. So I double check that. I make sure that we have enough movement with their methylation pathways to be able to detoxify and to handle the stress on the body. It is super duper stressful to detox out mold. I will sometimes, depending on the case, you know, I can sometimes use niacinamide of some degree with a sauna to help them to start to detoxify out some mold. It depends on how they are responding with that, because that can push methylation pathways too far with niacin or niacinamide. You know, it can be too much for their overall system. So I want to make sure that that's running well. You are never going to fully fix the methylation pathways until you fix the mold. So, you know, there's, you know, so it's like kind of a balancing act. You almost have to revisit that. You know, with, I also will help boost up vitamin C levels. I personally use liposomal vitamin C. The problem with what I do in comparison is a mold detox also dumps heavy metals and other environmental chemicals. So I really have to make sure that antioxidant levels across the board are good. I check vitamin C, NAC, glutathione, and I run that on a test, you know, lipoic acid. I want to make sure that their mitochondrial pathways are functioning. So like looking at acetyl L-carnitine, you know, all of these things that are going to contribute into anything that's going to help them or give them bodies the ability to detox. So I look at it specialized. Again, my mold detoxifications potentially aren't going to be the same, but the bottom line is to make sure they're eliminating, to make sure their liver function is up and regulating, to make sure that their nutrition function is enough to be able to detoxify in a decent way, an antioxidant function to make sure that that's okay. Because the side effects of doing the mold detox, I think for the first month, I warn them, they can be severe. You know, you can get, your symptoms can worsen, and that's sometimes what we'll see. Is worsening of the symptoms for the first month.
Yeah, that's why it's so important to be working with someone that can help you manage that when it comes up, not something that you would want to take on your own. And I just want to like bring this back to fertility for a second, because so many of the things that you were just talking about that are necessary to support have such a huge impact on fertility. When we were talking about organic acid testing, we were talking about all these mitochondrial markers, and then we were just talking about all these antioxidant markers, the very things that are recommended supplementally to support egg quality in women that are struggling with that. Mm-hmm. So if you think like mitochondria can be disrupted with mold, that is required to be working very well for proper development and maturation of egg cells. When we hear a lot of IVF specialists tell women, well, this isn't working because you probably have poor egg quality and you have some of the symptoms of mold exposure, or you know that you have a history of that, like this is something that's so important to investigate. And anything that's going to deplete your body's antioxidant stores is going to affect fertility, both for men and women, for sperm quality and egg quality. So just, you know, throwing that in there as a kind of final thing to bring it back to fertility, because this is really affects all aspects of it.
Yeah, I couldn't find the study. That's why I didn't reference it. But sperm quality and egg quality are completely affected by mold exposure. But I couldn't pare it down right before we got on the call. And so I generally don't like to quote it, but there was actually a PubMed study that was done on that. So that is out there. Exactly what you're saying.
Okay. Well, so we are coming to an end here, but share a little bit more about your practice, where listeners can learn more from you.
Totally. So my practice, I have two in Colorado area. Yeah. Can't have just one. So, you can find us at ALT, FAM, FAM, Med, MED. And we have a podcast called Fearless Health Podcast. We definitely dive into the subject of mold a lot. So anyway, and you can find us on socials, et cetera, all the normal places. So anyway, let us know if you need anything.
Well, I will link to all of that in the show notes. Any closing pieces of advice or final pearls of wisdom on the mold subject for couples that might be struggling with their fertility?
Really, people try to negotiate the mold piece. And please don't do this. Like, well, you know, it's really cheap to live here, and so I'm going to stay. Or, well, you know, we can't move out yet. I don't want to move out. Like, it's for your health. It's for your baby's health. There might be four people in a family, but two are really, really suffering. You know, it's so, so important to get out of that situation is step one. So, I mean, just, it's going to cost you so much more in the long run to stay, you know, with quality of life and time and finances and trying to figure out. It's so frustrating to get to the root of the problem with mold. And if any of this resonates, just get it checked out. I mean, the test is not expensive to double check it. And if you think that any of this relates, and mold can be in your system for a very long time, you might have been exposed now, you might have been exposed 20 years ago. And by the way, it gets passed from mothers to babies, right? Like, that's definitely something that I want to point out. So it could have just been something that you've dealt with for a long time. It doesn't have to be a current situation that you're living in.
Very good points. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Ann, for joining me today and talking about this kind of scary topic for people. Hopefully no one is overwhelmed and they know that there is help for this. It can be remediated. You can get out of that situation. There are ways to detoxify and heal your body and restore your fertility. So thank you for sharing.
Thanks for having me.